This is an oral history interview for the Kinsley Library. Joan Weaver and Rosetta Graff are the interviewers. And we're in the home of Kenny Bartman today. And Kenny, can you tell us your first name? Or your full name, I'm sorry.
Kenneth E. Bartman.
And I guess I should have said this is October, what'd you tell me?
No, it's February.
February
23rd,
1911. And where do you currently reside?
Where I currently live at, 818 East 4th, Kinsley.
And when and where were you born?
12 miles south of town on a farm.
And what's your birth date?
July 29, 1929.
And what were the names of your parents?
Roy and Gladys Bartman.
And your grandparents?
Dan Bartman and Elizabeth Bartman. And that's on my dad's side. And then R.P. Allison and Viola Allison were grandparents on mother's side.
And Viola, is that spelled V-I-O-L-A?
I think so.
Okay. And what was your household like? Did you have brothers, sisters?
I had a brother and a sister.
And were they older, younger, in their names?
No, I was the oldest one. Benita was next. The sister was next, and my brother was the youngest one.
And what was his name?
His name is Alfred Bartman.
And this is just sort of a little background, but what brought your family to Edwards County, your grandparents, whoever came here first?
Well, Granddad came from Maryland when he was in a teenage and lost track of any of the other relatives further back than that on his side. So, he married a girl from Zook, and her name was Zook, and her granddad's the one that started the little town of Zook, south of Lawrence.
So did he just get on a train in Maryland and come out to be a cowboy? Or
Well, he came out and lived with cowboys. Now, how he got here, we don't know.
Okay. But he was sort of a cowboy?
He was a cowboy.
Oh, well, that's interesting.
Kind of rough around the edges.
And did he work for Mr. Zook? Or is that how he married your father?
Not that I know of. No. He was strictly a cowboy. And after, as far as I know, he never did work for Mr. Zook.
You just met your grandmother somehow? And
yeah. And don't ask how. I don't know.
When he obviously settled down, is that when he brought property south of Kinsley?
They lived over toward Larner for a while, and then later they moved down Caldwell County and he farmed down there.
Okay. And so then was your father born in what? Like, are we in this property 12 miles south? Or?
Probably down in Caldwell County. Yeah.
He was born there. Do you have any other memories of your grandfather you'd like to record, or any other stories you've heard? Or
Not really, because they lived up, they had moved to Nickerson in the meantime, lived up there for a while. Matter of fact, that's where he lived when he died. But now, my other granddad, I knew him better, that lived. Okay. He lived on a farm down north of Greensburg, and he came from Baxter, Tennessee, and don't ask why. He came from Baxter, Tennessee to down north of Greensburg and them sand hills, because there's no comparison. Tennessee was beautiful, green, small mountains and trees and stuff, and out there in Caldwell County, there was nothing. So I wish I knew why he came from Tennessee out here.
Well, maybe in both cases. You know about what year the grandfathers came to Kansas?
No, I don't. It had to be around 1900, along that era, I suppose.
Well, what was it like growing up 12 miles south of Kinsley?
Like living out in the country.
Well, what's that like? Tell us about it. What were your duties and chores? Was it crops or cattle?
We had the cattle and all this stuff and did chores. At that time, Dad was working for the State Highway Department, took care of the highway from Kinsley down to the Caldwell County line. But we lived on a farm out there. And it just normal living out in the country with no electricity at first, and we come to Kinsley for everything we needed maybe once a week, and that's about it. Kind of quiet life out there in the country.
So your dad did both? Did he farm and work both? Well, or was it just a small living in the country more?
He had farmed earlier, but he gave that up during the Dirty 30s era and went to work for the State Highway Department.
And so when you were growing up, it was mainly raising things for the family's use?
Yeah, and then occasionally we'd have a few cattle to sell or something like that, but I never got in on any of the farming stuff, and I did help the cattle and stuff.
Did you have milk cows?
Oh, yeah.
So one of your chores was milking?
Yeah, that was one of my jobs there, to go run them in and milk and all that sort of bad stuff.
And chickens and pigs? And then a garden?
Oh, yeah, that was standard procedure.
And did your mother work, or did she stay home?
Later on she worked, but she didn't when we lived out in the country. Until, I don't know, in the 40s when we moved to town.
Something else flashed through my head right then. What was it?
Which you moved into Kinsley then, in the 40s?
In the, like 46, 47, somewhere along in there.
And I'm going to look back here already. You were born in 29, so you were... Did you come into the... Were you still in high school?
Oh, yeah. Just barely.
Yeah. And you graduated then from Kinsley High School?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And, okay, so we're in the 40s now, and what are your memories of World War II? Do you remember what you were doing on Pearl Harbor?
Yeah, I remember that day real plain. It was cold and snowy and nasty, and we heard it on the radio and couldn't believe it, and I had three uncles that were at the right age that was drafted real quick, and of course naturally we had to worry about them all the while they were gone, and those three made it. But we had another uncle, and he was a pilot, and they flew out of North Africa to bomb Germany, and he for years was missing in action. His plane was flying back to Germany, or to North Africa. The only thing you can figure that it must have went down in the Mediterranean, because there's no trace of them or the plane or nothing. And after so many years, why, they declared him dead.
And you were still in the country during the war, right?
Yes.
And at that time, did you have electricity, or when the electricity came?
No, we didn't have electricity until we moved to town.
Until you moved to town.
In the 40s. Mm-hmm.
How did the war affect your life?
Well, it didn't affect me very much. I was young enough, it didn't matter much, but we had to worry about uncles.
About
it was over in Europe, three of them at the same time.
Do you remember rationing, or?
Oh, yeah, we had short on a few items, shoes and some food. Bacon was the thing that was hard to get, and gasoline. Yeah, we kind of had to make a few changes.
Did you go to a country school then?
First 2 years I did, first and second grade.
What was the name of it?
It was Charlotte.
Charlotte?
There's nothing here anymore.
Great.
I can't even tell where the foundations were. However, the school, they sold it and moved to town. It's down here where Joe Shaler lived on the East 4th down here, just down the street here a couple blocks.
Yeah.
And they moved to town and made it into a house.
Are you going to be able to find the address for that for
us? Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
It was a one-room school.
Right now. One-room school with one teacher?
One teacher, one-room school, and it was, I don't remember now how many was in there. I think eight or ten kids there.
Covering what grades? You said kindergarten, first grade
through? No, kindergarten.
No, first grade, second grade through?
To the eighth.
To the eighth. And you had about eight kids?
Eight or ten, I don't remember for sure. I remember Lee Crothers was one of them, but he was about 5 years older than I was, so he was in the fifth grade, I think. And little old the one-room schoolhouse, and I was the only one in the first grade, and we, I don't know, I was kind of forgot, you know. She spent more time with the older kids than she didn't worry about me, so, yes.
Was the school heated with wood, or?
Yeah, an old, or coal, it was an old
coal.
Pot-belly stove sitting out in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
She had to get there early in the morning to fire it up, and in the wintertime, the rest of the time was all right.
And how did you get to school?
Walk.
How far?
Oh, I only had to walk a half a mile or so. Well, some of the kids, they rode a horse or had to be brought that lived further away, but I was fortunate we didn't live very far away.
Can you remember anything else about going to school in a one-room schoolhouse?
No, well, for recess, we always played baseball, and that was the highlight of the day.
Of course. Did you have programs and things at the school?
I don't remember any.
And did school start after Labor Day? And I mean,
no, I don't know exactly when it started. It is the 1st of September, I know. Mm-hmm. Probably about the first Monday after Labor Day, but mm-hmm. I don't know for sure. That's too many years ago.
Yeah. Well, you were pretty young at that time, too.
Yeah.
You have any other questions about Charlotte School?
Who was your teacher? Do you remember your teacher's name?
Mm-hmm. Fern Myers. And she, after a few years of that, she married Earl McBride, and they ended up living over at Larned.
Well, we have both their interviews
in
our collection.
Yeah. Well, she is my first and second grade teacher.
Okay.
When you moved into town from a country school, did you fit right in, or were there problems?
No, I didn't have any problems. No, I.
Okay.
And that would have been third grade, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Down to Southside School here in Kinsley. No, I didn't have any problems. I got along great. I still remember a few that was in the same, in the third grade there. Norman Elliott was one of them. So I've known him ever since third grade.
Okay.
Did you like living in the city better than the country?
Yeah.
Didn't have the chores?
Didn't have chores doing. There's a little more activity in the evenings. Out in the country, you stayed in the country at evenings. Here in town, well, we could.
And what did you do here in town?
I'll tell everybody. Well, there's just more to do. You go to the theater any night you wanted to, and go out and play with your friends and stuff like that. So there was a lot more to do here in town than there was living out in the country. It was different. Out in the country, you had more chores to do. Here in town, you had more time to loan. Mm-hmm.
So. There was a basketball program at the school, and you could play basketball.
Well, I never got into sports too much because always had a job after school working. And
when did you start working then? At 14?
Where did I start?
Yeah, 14.
I started working for D. Cox at the filling station. And my job at the filling station was doing what the men didn't want to do, washing windows, mm-hmm. sweeping out cars, and stuff like that.
And how old were you? About?
Oh, 15, 16, long in that area. I don't know for sure. I can't remember that far back.
Where was this filling station at?
Down by the overpass, you know, on the west side of the road. The old building's still there. On the Highway 56 there on the west side, or north side, whichever they want to call it. Some people call it west side, and that's what I call it, west side.
And then, did you stayed there all through high school working there? Or?
No, I was saying, when I worked for D, it was probably more in junior high, because when I was a freshman, I started working for mammals, working after schools on Saturday at the store. And after I got out of school, I stayed there and worked till I went to the Army. And then I ended up working for almost 28 years.
You started out being like a bag boy and sweeper and
I did
soccer?
I did that for about 2 weeks. And then they needed somebody back in the market to slice much meat and stuff like that. So that's, I went to the market after about 2 weeks and stayed there for almost 28 years. And the market manager there at the time, his name was Morse Rogers, and he taught me to cut meat, and I just stayed there. Well, that was my job for 28 years.
And Morse, M-O-R-R-I-S, Rogers.
He was originally from Hutchinson, a nice guy. He was a good teacher, too.
Now, Mammals was like, was a chain type store,
yeah, we had
right?
14 stores, but I think it ended up 13 most of the time. But they were scattered all around this area. Larned, La Crosse, Hayes, Russell. I don't remember where all. Oh, Slina. I ended up working Slina for them for a couple of years there in the 50s when I first got back out of the Army. And it was a pretty decent job. It was better than average around here at that time.
I had another question. Keep going out of my head. I needed some coffee this morning.
Did I break your chain of thought?
No, it was about mammals. So, oh, how many employees worked at the store here when you were in the 50s?
Well, it was three of us in the market. Oh. And I don't know how many was in the whole store. So it was complete separate. The market was separate from the grocery department. Now, Norman Elliott, he was the store manager, and he had, well, I don't know, probably six, eight working for him. But in the market, there's just me and three others.
Now, were there other, let's talk about the 50s and the 60s a little bit. Were there other grocery stores at that time?
And oh, yeah. We had, there was the North Side and Weidenheimer's IGA, and then for a short time, there was another one. God, I don't even remember what her name was. It wasn't here very long. It was in the old opera house there, across on the street from the bank, you know, on the east side where it's a vacant building now. It was there for a while. So at one time we had four grocery stores.
Wasn't there a Safeway store at the same time?
Yeah. It was a block north on the corner where Marvin Ryan is now.
Okay, in the 50s and 60s, yes, so you talked about the entertainment a little bit, that there was a theater. And was that just when there was a skating rink,
yeah.
And then what other businesses were downtown, or what was the downtown like? Or even going back a little bit, when you said you'd come into town once a week.
Well, back then, there was all kinds of businesses. There was every car dealer, every brand of car was sold here. And there was John Deere dealer, and International, Alice Helmer, all of them. And, well, Kinsman was a pretty decent town back then. We had everything you'd think of.
This would be before the war or in the 50s?
This was before the 40s and 50s. And it was a real going town during the war, because all the troops from Dodge City Air Base there come to Kinsley on Saturday. They liked Kinsley better than they did Dodge for some reason, and they came over here and they kept the town hopping on Saturdays here in town.
So I take it there were some liquor establishments.
Well, it may have been. I don't know.
Well, I was wondering how many of those. We know how many grocery stores.
Well, there was three pool halls, and they all sold beer.
Is this when we're dry in World War II? Were they clubs?
Yeah.
Were they clubs then?
There was no liquor.
So they would be club, private club type.
Right. I don't even think we had any private clubs then. All we had was bootleggers back in.
Okay.
And in 49's when liquor 49. Could be sold in Kinsley.
Ah. So that was after the war.
Yes.
So maybe the soldiers could find a bootlegger easier and get.
Yeah, that would make too much trouble to find one of them.
Not a problem. Let's see. So when you in the 50s, you could pretty much stay in Kinsley and do your shopping. You could buy clothes and shoes and.
Oh yeah, everything. Clothing stores. It was. Three clothing stores at one time, and then it ended up with was really two for most of the time. And you didn't have to go to Larned or Dodge to get anything. It used to be right here. And the town just dwindled away until what it is today.
Well, this question just flashed. Where did you get your beef and pork that you cut up in mammals? Was that local, or did that come in?
No, that came in from trucks. Winchester Packing House and Hutchinson bought a lot of it. And then there was Swift, Armour, and Cudahy. All had salesmen that come around once a week, take your order. And then a truck brought it out in a couple, 3 days. And yeah, we had no problem there. We had good delivery service on beef. All came in quarters. And you started from scratch there, cutting it up. Nowadays, it all comes in a box, all boned out. All you got to do is just slice it up. So, you really, really don't have any meat cutters around anymore, except in the packing house where they put it in the boxes.
Well, and I think back then, even your luncheon meat and that sort of thing, it didn't come packaged. You got it big and you sliced
it
for the customer.
Right, you had to slice it all up here.
I'm trying to think what other differences there might have been. You were actually...
Well, I don't know what's so much different what they're doing today than us. So I don't know what they're doing today really about it. But back then, we got all the stuff from back in the house and had to cut it up. The lunch meat, cheese, beef, had grinded the hamburger. The whole bit was done here. One thing I did like then was sauerkraut. We got in a wooden keg, about a 30-gallon keg. And that was a lot different. This canned kraut you get today, there's no comparison to what it came in out of a wooden keg. And I used to thought, I didn't like sauerkraut, but I kept nibbling at it to where I learned to like it cold. Now, I don't want it cooked yet today. I want to eat it raw and cold. And it's good. So, yeah, that was different.
And I don't know, what was the milk and eggs in your part, too?
No,
or that was in the grocery department?
That was in the dairy department, or the grocery department. Mm-hmm.
So, let's see here. How did you meet your wife?
Well, the only thing I remember, somebody introduced me to her, and I didn't think too much about it at the time, but then a few days later, I met her again at a dance or something in Oakley, and it just went from there. Mm-hmm.
And at this time, you were not in the service, right?
No, that was probably, I was still in high school.
You were still in high school when you met her. And I was trying to think what you said. You got married in 1950, and then you were drafted?
Yeah, I was drafted. I didn't volunteer. I was a coward. I waited until they drafted me. And was drafted for 2 years. But I got 3 months knocked off of going to Korea. Mm-hmm. So I was out in 21 months. And that was long enough.
And, let's see, I'm trying to see here. You got married the end of 1950. So how long were you married before you were drafted and left?
It would have been about 6-8 months,
Terry, you want to tell us a little bit about your Army experience, or where'd you go for boot camp?
Well, I was drafted, like I said, in 51 there, and went to Camp Chaffee, Arkansas for 14 weeks of infantry basic, and then put on an airplane and flew to Korea. And that was pretty hasty from being a kid running around doing nothing to ended up in Korea on the front line in a matter of about 3 weeks. So, yeah, it wasn't good. And I remember it was raining the day we got there, and it didn't quit raining, it just changed over to snow, and it snowed and was cold all winter. And I was glad to get out of there the next spring.
And you were in the fighting, the front lines, or?
Oh yeah, I spent 105 days on the front line in one stretch. And our regimental commander, the Marines had been up there and stayed 100 days. We had to go up and stay 105 to beat their record. And that was a long, stinking time up there. I remember Oh, we got one change of clothes in that 100 days, 105 days. And when we come back off the line, we looked like something had been left over from, I don't know what, from, yeah, it was terrible.
Now, were you living in tents, or were you just in the open, or both, or?
Most of the time was just out in the open. And when we was pushing every night, now we didn't do any pushing at night. The North Koreans, they were the ones that liked to fight at night, and we didn't, because you couldn't see, and those little devils could see at night, I guess. Anyway, at night, we'd dig a foxhole and get in it, and two at a time, and one was supposed to stay awake all night. We switched off about an hour on, an hour off, you know, and that's how we spent our night, was wherever we was at, dig a hole and crawl in it. And in the wintertime, when it got too miserable cold, we didn't do much pushing, so we built what we called a bunker, dig a hole and put some tree limbs across the top and kind of try to stay out of the weather, and that's where we spent our night. But there was one advantage. I don't think I had a cold all winter long, because we got cold in the fall, stayed cold till spring, and I never had not even a runny nose all winter. But however, a lot of fellas, they made a mistake. They got frostbite toes and fingers, and my toes got cold, but stopped my feet a little bit, and didn't worry about it. But some guys, I seen their toes get black and look nasty, and some of them had to have them amputated. So, yeah, it wasn't nice.
What was your food like?
Not to talk about it. All we had was sea rations up there. And we had a little dinky can opener that we carried on our dog chains, or with our dog tags, and open up a can of anything there, corned beef hash and stew and spaghetti and meatballs. Now that was the best one of the bunch, but it was always cold. We most of the time didn't heat it, and they had a layer of fat on the top, and you take that and throw it away and try to eat the rest of it. And there was always a little can of peaches or fruit, and if somebody had one that they didn't want, they could sell that little old can for $2, and that's a lot of money back then when we was making $18 a month. But nobody had any trouble selling them, because that fruit was the best thing that was in the pack. And crazy, they produced a lot of cigarettes. They always had a package of cigarettes in each sea ration carton, so we got a pack of cigarettes every day. And I don't know, them sinking hills over there.
You said you're pushing and said, how much ground would you gain in a day?
Well, that'd vary. Some days it'd be pretty easy. We might go for 5 miles or so. And then there was other days we didn't even get to move. And some days, if things worked out right, we even lost ground there sometimes. Mm-hmm. Not very often, but it had to happen. We'd give up some ground, and then they'd take it again. And I remember one hill that was loaded with North Koreans or Chinese on top. And the company commander, he called in Air Force to soften it up a little bit on top. Well, the guys coming over the planes, they could see us on the side of the hill. They couldn't see the enemy up on top, so they thought, misjudges. And they worked us over real good. And we lost ground that day, because there was, in the first platoon, there was 42 of us that morning when we started up the hill. And there was 6 or 7 of us came off on our own power that night. The rest of them, now they all weren't killed, but a lot of them was killed and the rest of them was wounded. So there was 6 or 7 of us that came off on our own power. It was a long, nasty day when they came in and dropped napalm bombs on us and were shooting 50 caliber machine guns at us from the plane. So, yeah, they took care of us in a hurry. I've got a 50 caliber slug in there. That I'll show you what a 50 caliber slug does. I remember one fellow was a company commander. He caught one in the shoulder, and that 50 caliber slug just boom, his arm was gone, just a hole up there in his shoulder, and he bled to death in about 2 minutes. His arm was just completely gone. There wasn't nothing there but a hole. We stuck a fatigue jacket in there trying to slow the blood down, and it didn't. We couldn't phase it on his left arm, too. And he bled to death in a couple minutes. But he was conscious for part of that time, and still giving orders till he crapped out. Yeah.
What was his name? Do you remember?
I don't remember his name. We had a few other names for him, but I forget them. And I remember the first thing he did was grab the telephone or the radio and call the company quarters and said you better send a replacement if he'd been shot and he was dying. And boy, he was right about that. And in a couple of minutes he was dead, but he called in and sent a replacement for him.
Isn't that something?
I remember he was a big, tough character, but couldn't fight that 50 caliber bullet.
You lost a lot of friends that day?
Yeah, I did. Out of the 42, I don't know how many of them got killed. Probably my 18 or 20. And they dropped napalm bombs on us. And the fellas that... I was lucky. The bomb hit behind me and splashed over me. So I was between where it landed and where it did the burning. And the guys that got on, it actually melted their M1 rifles. The napalm bomb, and you can't put it out. It just burns. Mm-hmm. And if a little flake of it gets on the back of your arm or something, it just burns right on through. But I remember seeing the rifles after over. Hey, they were just plain burned up. And the fellas that got on, it wasn't good.
No. And you did this for 105 days?
105. Well, no, we didn't fight like that every day.
No.
But we were on the front where you had to watch out where you was at and pay attention to what you was doing for 105 days. And one change of clothes. Now, that was a pitiful part. I remember when I first went up there, I had a white T-shirt on, but I kept tearing a little hunk off of it to clean my rifle. And it finally wasn't anything left of it. So I ended up with just a fatigue jacket and a little T-shirt underneath. And it was getting cold up there. And it was in, I don't know for sure, end of October, first of November before we got in winter clothes. And it was getting cold. But we survived it. I don't know how.
Were you able to write? Did you get letters? Or how often did you have contact with home?
Well, yeah, we got some mail occasionally. We got more mail than we could send letters out to because we didn't have time or a place to really to write letters. But yeah, we received mail a couple times a week or so.
Okay.
And if we had a letter roll, we could send it back to the mailman when he came that day. But a lot of days we didn't have time to write a letter. So I suppose the folks at home, they didn't get the mail that we did.
And you were in Korea itself how long?
I was in Korea 9 months.
9 months. And you were pretty much busy fighting all that time. Were there ever any?
You had to have 36 points to get out of there. Mm-hmm. And I got 4 points a month. That's what the infantry got. If it was in combat, it was 4 points a month. And I got out in 9 months because I got 4 points every month. But if he was in artillery, you only got 3 points, and supply them got two, and so on back to where you got one. So some of the rascals had to stay quite a while. But being in the infantry and not losing any time from being wounded or anything, like I got out in 9 months. That's the reason I got out as quick as anybody did. But I was thinking the time would be nice to, you know, being in the artillery or supply or something, but you had to stay so much longer.
If you could survive.
Yeah, if you could survive, yeah. Yeah, a lot of guys didn't survive it. It was funny. A fellow got, the first 2 weeks he was there, he either got killed or wounded in the first 2 weeks, or the last 2 weeks before he got to go home. I don't know how many people they spent their, be there for 8 months and 2 weeks or so, and damn if they didn't get wounded or killed just before this raid came home. It was weird how that happened, just time after time.
And there wasn't any R&R during those 9 months?
We had 5 days back in Japan during that time, R&R. 5 days back. They flew us back to Japan, and the worst part of that was having to go back.
Mm-hmm.
It was great to go, but that going back wasn't too enthused. And I remember one kid, he wanted to make a career out of the Army. And to be a career soldier, combat infantry badge was almost a must if you're going to be an infantry. He volunteered to go to Korea to get a combat infantry badge. He didn't even last 2 weeks till he got killed. And he volunteered for it just to have that damn CIB badge. I got one there, I'll show you after a while. He gave his life for that and then didn't get to use it. And he was gung-ho. He wanted to be a career soldier, which I guess everybody to his own choice. It wasn't mine. I didn't get along with the Army too well. I offered it pretty good. I made the rank of Sergeant First Class or Tech Sergeant and earned the Combatter's Badge and the Bronze Star. So my military career was pretty decent, but I wasn't a career soldier, but only.
And you were, I'm trying to think, like 21, right?
Yeah.
Was that the typical age for the soldier, or were you?
Yeah, that was about it. Now, we did have a few that we called retreads. They were left over from World War II that mm-hmm. stayed in reserve, and they sent them over. And I remember, I don't know how many of them they sent over, but every one of them said the same thing. If they ever, when they got their foot out of Korea, they didn't get out of the damn Army. Mm-hmm. They'd seen all they wanted of it. They said it was worse than anything they'd seen in Europe.
Oh, Korea was.
That's what the ones in the retreats mm-hmm. that were made the mistake of staying in reserve said they were through if they ever got out of there.
Was that because of the fighting or?
Well, everything. There wasn't any flat land in Korea. It was going uphill, down. They were standing on the sidewalk all the time. And the fighting, too. It was, I don't know how it was in Europe, but there was some nasty days for the fighting.
And maybe the climate also wasn't.
Pardon?
The climate maybe also was
worse. Yeah, that didn't help
me
either. Yeah, climate was nasty. And we marched all clear up the Yellow River, which is the border between North Korea and Manchuria. And Harry called us back to 38, then we sat there and time to come home. Kind of crazy, but that's the way it worked.
Maybe, what are your feelings about the Korean War? And
100% waste of time and lives and everything else. It was to stop communism. The only thing that they stopped was the ones that were killed. Because the North, they're still at it. So, as far as I was concerned, it was a waste of time. My time.
Mm-hmm.
Crazy.
Now, I'm trying to think. Your son was born in 51,
mm-hmm.
so you left a pregnant wife?
Yeah, Kent was 9 months old when I got home. Yeah.
You received pictures and things like that in the letters? So.
Yeah, I received pictures from it. However, the telegram I got, he was 2 weeks old by the time the telegram got to me. But, I had several pictures of him, you know, as a baby. And then when I got home, it took a little while for him to think that I belonged around there. He didn't really think mm-hmm. I belonged there.
Mm-hmm.
But he got over that after a while.
Well, your wife had a lot of adjustments there, too. She got married. 6 months later, you went to service. Then she had a baby.
Yeah.
And was she living with her folks or anything at that time?
She stayed with her folks while I was gone, which was nice. And she was great. You couldn't ask for a better one.
It had a lot of good examples from World War II of women who stayed home and tried to keep things going.
I suppose, yeah.
Can you think of anything else you might want to?
Wilda was raised Lutheran, is that right?
No, I think she went to a church in Oakley there till after we got married. And I wasn't Lutheran either, but when we, I worked at Salina in one of the stores up there, and when we came back, I don't know, we got invited to the church up there and went from there.
Okay.
I guess they were the first ones that talked to us about coming to church, so that's when we joined the Lutheran Church, not the church up there. Mm-hmm. And still are today. Okay.
So did you go to church when you were out in the country?
Not very much, no. Really didn't belong to a church till we joined up here at the Lutheran Church. Okay. However, on the dog tag it says Protestant, but that's just because it wasn't Catholic, I guess. It didn't really, wasn't too involved anyway.
Okay. This is just a question to jump ahead so I can go back, but when did you retire from mammals? What year?
74.
So, what changes did you see in that, you know, from 1950 to 1974, in just your job or in mammals with SOAR?
Well, the big change, when I first started working, we didn't have a fire saw. You did everything the hard way with a saw and a knife. And then, after I was there a few years, got an electric saw. And that took the work out of any meat cutter. You laid it on her.
That would have been like the late 50s, or?
At least that. It was probably
early 60s?
Maybe in the late 50s or early 60s that we got that power electric saw. And that was great. That took the work out of any meat cutter. Because you'd stand there running the saw all day long. And it took a long time to cut a quarter of beef when you're doing it with the old handsaw. And then when you got the fire saw, golly, 30 minutes you could have her all done. So it made a world of difference. Talking about cutting up things, I remember when I worked in the store in Great Bend, Larry Lear was there, and we had two blocks side by side, and we would run races to see who could cut up chickens the fastest. And we got to where we could cut and package 3 chickens a minute. I mean, we didn't wrap them, but put them in container, a styrofoam container for the girls to wrap.
20 seconds per chicken?
Yep.
And what, Lear was the last name?
Larry Lear.
How do you spell that Lear?
L-E-H-R.
L-E-H-R. We do that for our transcriber just to help her out a little bit.
Yeah, Larry was quite a Larry, but we run a lot of races. Cutting up.
I can't see. Did you lose any fingers?
I still got all of mine, fortunately. They've all been cut. But, well, you know, that finger there, the fingernail, is slim on that one side, and the end of it came out up here. I shaved all that off. But I thought I was going to bleed to death.
Any other changes in the meat packing? Maybe now, were you wrapping it all this time in the butcher paper?
Right. Back when we first started, we wrapped it in them old meat cases. We'd take it out, wrap it up, and lay it on the counter. Then later on, we went self-service. We had the self-service cases where it was wrapped cellophane, well, like it is today, pretty much. So, yeah, there was a world of changes in that.
When did self-service start about?
I don't know. In the 60s.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm sure it was in the 60s. And that changed being a meat cutter, too, and working in the market. People come by, pick up what you want, went on. Before, you had to take it out, weigh it, and wrap it, and put price on it, and all that.
And you had some contact with the public.
The
chitty chat.
Well, you had contact with everyone there first. Mm-hmm. And then later on, we were still there close, and a lot of people, you had to help with something, but it took the personal contact out of it, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember waiting on your mother a lot of times there in the store.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Any other changes in that job and that while you were there? Those are two major ones that, you know, you don't think about these things changing.
Not really. No, it is pretty much.
Did you become the teacher and teaching other people? I assume you were there the longest.
Yeah, I was there almost. I had one boy I had several boys working for me after school Saturday. And David Warner, I taught him to cut meat. And then after I finally quit, he went to work for Harold Burkhart down in the in the locker plant because I taught him how to cut meat mm-hmm. at the store there, and he was good at it. Mm-hmm. yeah, caught a Dave.
Did you get involved in cutting game for people?
Oh, son, not yeah, much. Tried to stay away from that. One thing, in the grocery store, we couldn't bring outside beef in like that. It had to come from the packing house where it was inspected and mm-hmm. all that stuff. So, no, we didn't get into the fresh game much.
Okay, so your children were in school here in Kinsley.
Right. Yeah, they both graduated down here in high school there. And then they both went to college then. And Kent ended up a pilot. And he was flying for Gary Davidson. And they always worried about him flying a plane of spraying crops. Mm-hmm. And then instead the damn ownership about him. So... We were worried about him for the wrong thing, I guess. But he was a good pilot. And then Rhonda, she went to school up at Hayes and ended up being an RN. And after she got married, they lived in Halstead there. And she worked in the Halstead Hospital for several years there.
Seems like that motorcycle people, kids in Kinsley liked motorcycles back in World War II before we found it was motorcycles.
Well, a lot of them around.
Did you have one ever?
I didn't have one, but I rode one a lot because Bill Riddle had one. He was a friend of mine. And he had one, and I had a car. So if he had a date or something that I wasn't using the car, he'd take the car, I'd take his motorcycle, and vice versa. So I had access. He had access to a car, and I rode his motorcycle then.
When did you get your first car?
I think I was a sophomore. Mm-hmm. 37 Plymouth.
Is that why you had a job? Just so you could have a car?
That's about it. Yeah. I remember the thing that helped me get it was the theater down there had a drawing once a week or so and gave away money, and I won $200 there one night. And with the money I had saved and that $200, I could buy this 37 Plymouth.
Isn't that something?
And that was in September because I think the next day after I got that car, I went to the Hutchinson Fair. That's the reason I can remember uh-huh. September. So, that poor old car never got shut off after that.
And now, when you got home from the service, let's see, what do you remember about coming home? You talked about your baby not recognizing you. How was the community when you came home?
Oh, it was great to get home and try to relax and stuff. I remember one of the kids that went in the Army the same time I did, Don Zanovich, he got killed in Korea. And when I came home, his dad met me, and I'll never forget the old boy, he squeezed me like, I know what memory had come back for his son, because mm-hmm. it went over together and he didn't get to come home. And Tony took it pretty rough, and I'll never forget, he grabbed me and squeezed me like crazy because he was just glad to see me. Yeah.
Well, and today we hear a lot about post-traumatic stress syndrome. Did you have an adjustment or just glad to be home?
I was glad to be home. Yeah, I had a little problem there, but nothing serious. A few dreams that weren't too whippy, but other than that, I survived it, I think, pretty well.
Going somewhere with that after that.
It's funny about even talking about the being a Korean. For years, I never mentioned to anybody. It's easier for me to talk about it now than it was 60 years ago. I don't know why. I guess my memory's getting dull, and it don't register like it used to, but I used to, but not mention it. Mm-hmm. Just didn't talk about it much.
Well, I think sometimes it's important to tell the story when you get older, too. Just mm-hmm.
Could be, I don't know.
Have someone else hear.
Yeah.
I was going to ask something else, and I lost my, before you even said that, I lost it. So he came back, and...
Well, when I came back, I went right back to work in the store in just a matter of days, because at that time, if you were drafted, the whoever you worked with, them, they had to give you a job back, so...
I went
right back to work. I didn't really take a vacation in there. I just went back to work.
And that may have helped your adjustment, too, to
I'm
go
sure
right back.
Did, yeah.
And that was my other question, was if you took advantage of the GI Bill or anything at all.
The only thing I did from GI was to get a GI loan to build this house.
Did you build the house yourself?
No. Gene Putter built the main part of the house, and now I added all this in here. Right here where we're sitting now was a garage, and I tore it off, and I did all the work on this end. Did the plumbing, electrical, woodwork, I did the work. All except I didn't make the fireplace or lay bricks. I let Alvin Baker do that, but I did all the rest of it. And on the stairway there, my brother-in-law, he helped on that. Ethan Raby, he helped on the stairway, but I did all the rest of this crap, the firing, wiring and plumbing and the whole bit, and putting up the sheetrock, and I didn't even know I was a carpenter.
It's lovely.
And I'm pretty well satisfied with the way it turned out. Mm-hmm.
And you did that in 1959, you said?
That Gene Putter built that, and we moved in 59, and this was all 15 years later.
Okay.
So. The reason I remember 59, it was Memorial Day of 59 when I moved in the original part of the house.
Where did you live when you came back until you built this house?
The three houses down here.
Rented or you bought? Or
I bought it.
You bought it then?
Yeah. And, but it was kind of a just temporary thing until we get the house we wanted. Now, Wilma drew the plans for this house here, the way we could afford her, the way she wanted it, you know, which was, I always thought she'd done a real good job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Nice house.
Wilda's very artistic.
Pardon?
Wilda is very artistic.
Yeah. Yeah, she, there's a bunch of pictures around here. Well, there's one there, and there's two or three out in the other room. Another back over there. She drew the pictures. Matter of fact, that's where she's at now, down School of Painting down there now.
Okay, so you graduated from Kinsley High School, and then your children also did. What changes were there in that time period between when you graduated and when they graduated?
Well, I suppose there's all kinds. I really don't know any particular
Were the
things.
Classes the same size, or were, I mean, how big was your class?
No, their classes were smaller. Yeah, if I'm not mistaken, ours had 51 or 2 kids in it, and theirs I don't think ever had but around 30, if I'm not mistaken on that. I feel roughly that. That or they divided it up into two bunches. I don't remember just how that worked. Their classes were smaller.
What years did they graduate? So you'd be about 72.
60.
Early 70s.
69 and 71, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Does that sound about size-wise?
Yeah. Yeah. There were bigger classes later on. We had some big classes.
Are they bigger now again?
No, but in between, someplace in the mid-70s, there was some big classes. Wilda graduated from Offerley High School.
Right.
Okay. And then we had consolidation. Did she have any feelings or vocal about the consolidation?
No, their classes were a lot smaller, is all I remember. There wasn't too many in it.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd be afraid to guess how many was in it.
Okay.
It was smaller. Of course, Oakley School didn't have near the kids as we did, so it had to be smaller.
Was there any controversy during that you remember in the community, or did that consolidation go rather smoothly?
Well, I think it pretty much already consolidated before that.
What was the year? We'd looked that up. No, I forgot.
You're asking hard questions.
Yeah. It's all right. We consolidated in...
It was earlier than you thought.
Earlier than I thought, yes. In the late 60s, we consolidated. And I never can remember that.
How many kids in your class ended up living here like you did? About.
Few. I'd say, 12, 15 at the most, I think.
Oh, and the rest of them, did they leave?
They
left? Or?
Scattered all over the country, and I don't know why. I suppose for jobs. And a lot of them went to college, and of course left to get a better job. And I already had my job, so I stayed here. And I guess I was fortunate I had a better job, I think, than a lot of them around here at the time. So.
Okay, you came back and you said you joined the Lutheran Church.
Mm-hmm.
We were sort of interested. How have you seen your church change in the 50s, 60s, 70s back then?
Oh, a few less people than there used to be then, yeah. And, it's completely changed because when we started, we were the younger ones, a bunch of old people running up and down. It's changed. We're the old clowns there, so, yeah, it's changed.
Were there Lutheran churches in the country that closed and brought people into this church, or... You know, sort of like the Catholic churches did?
Well, this church here originally was 8 or 10 miles north of town, and they moved it in here in, what was that, 49? In the 40s, late 40s, and remodeled it and stuff.
So the people in the country were already coming in here to church when you joined it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What, were there... activities at the church? Was it basically go to church on Sunday, or were there other things that were...
Well, there was other things through the week, yeah. Well, one thing, we started at sausage and pancake supper. It's still going on today. And the first one I attended there was in 59, and I missed two of them in all those years. And one of them was this last year because Will was in the hospital in Wichita. And then one time I had the flu, so I missed it twice from 59 to 71. Or 81, 90, that's 11, damn it.
And you've always had a full-time minister?
Oh, yeah. And then there was a while we didn't. We had to share with Overly, but we even had a full-time minister then, but he was taking care of two congregations, which still doing that today.
And about how many people attend at your church?
It's probably about as small as it ever was now, I think. 35, 40.
And maybe when you joined it was...
Well, it was better than 50, like, yeah. Yeah, things have changed that way. So they move away. Of course, the whole county has went down, what, a third or... from what it used to be.
Yeah. That's one thing we're sort of trying to investigate, how that decline in population, you know, affected the community.
Okay, the flood of 1965, did you have water in your house, close to your house?
We were fortunate. Oh, it was all around the house.
Yeah.
And it would have been about 4 inches above the floor level, but I had taken the plastic and lay down over the doors and then put sandbags over that, and we didn't get any in the house, but it was about 4 or 5 inches above floor level, so we kept it out, and it was just starting to seep in the back door somewhere, and Norman and I came down here to check on it and had to climb through the garage window to get in, and came in and I seen it seeping. It was just a little bit out across the linoleum, and we replaced the bags, sandbags, and kept it out. But had we not came down, we might have had more water in the house. But we weren't supposed to be here. They stopped us down there by Stanley Young's. Had National Guard or somebody down there with rifles. Said, you can't go down there. There's a flood. I said, well, we know there's a flood down there. Our house is down there. So well, you can't go down. I said, well, you're going to have to stop us. And we walked on, and they stood there and grinned at us, and we went on. And I'm glad we did, because otherwise... We'd have come down a day or two later, we might have had water on, but we lucked out and just had a little dribble out across the floor. But the yard was a mess. Yeah, the mud and crap that washed in. You had to see it to believe it.
Other floods have, you know, we used to have rain and Coon Creek would flood. Did you ever get flood water again?
No, we never had anything serious, no. Mm-hmm. We've had it out in the street and stuff, but and I remember that 65. It was running down this street east here. I was going to go over and see how deep it was and harness the house across the street. And as I was walking across the street there, my feet were slipping on the pavement. The water was pushing that hard. And I thought, this is stupid. If that water ever knocks you down, you'll end up down the stream. So I turned around and got out of there. It was really running like crazy. Yeah.
Okay, well, we had some questions about the health care changes and things like that. Your children were born in the hospital?
Yeah, over here in the hospital on Fifth Street.
On Fifth Street.
And well, Rhonda was. She was born in Great Bend because I was working for Mammals in Great Bend at that time. But Kent was born over here.
She's home.
That was, well, she just drove in. Got tired of painting, I guess. Well, that's about that time, yeah.
And so, during the 50s and 60s, you had your doctor and eye doctors and dentists.
Oh,
they were
yeah,
all here.
Doctors, dentists, and everything. Dr. Snowblum was here then, and he did a good job taking care of everybody. He was a good doctor.
Hello.
Hi there.
I thought maybe you guys had it all said already.
Oh, not quite yet. We're hearing good stories. We've been talking
about
you
so much.
Oh, yes.
Well, I didn't have anything to say. She kept talking.
What have you seen changes in the health care?
Oh, yeah. Didn't have a hospital originally. And, if you had to go to the hospital, you went to either Great Bend or Dodge somewhere. And then in 49, moved over here. And moved over here. They built this one over here. And I was one of the earlier patients that they had my tonsils taken out in 49, and it was new then. But the reason I wanted to take them out then, I didn't want to have them taken out in the Army. So I had to take it out before I went in, because I'd heard so many stories about Army doctors and dentists and stuff. So I had my teeth all worked on and had my tonsils taken out before I went in the Army.
That may have helped you not have those colds.
It could have.
When you got over there.
I tried to take care of everything in advance. You know, you've heard stories, I'm sure, about particularly Army dentists. And I didn't want to go there. I remember seeing some guys in Crip had a cavity or something, and they had an old one guy, he run a hand machine to run the drills to work, and you were sitting out in the open, have your teeth worked on. Fortunately, I didn't have to do that. But can you imagine sitting out in the open in an ordinary chair and somebody turning the drill working on a tooth?
And maybe it's cold? Oh.
Yeah, crazy.
Well, one other area that we sort of are always curious about is the minorities in town and how they lived. And
well, we didn't have any problem there. There was very few minorities around here at the time. There was Gaineses and Winchesters, and they were nice people. They were just black, but they were nice people. And
did mammals serve them the same? And
They were just nice people. They were just black. Now, Skeet Winchester, you probably remember him, don't you? You couldn't find a better person than Skeet Winchester. I'd rather sit down and eat with him or talk to him than anybody I know, because he was a nice guy. He was just black.
Mm-hmm. And how about the Hispanic community?
Well, we had a few. I remember Jess Molina and his dad, Joe, you know. And then there was Rincons. They were all nice people. We didn't have any trouble with the natives, not like today. Matter of fact, I don't know any of the new ones that come moving in here, but the natives that lived here in Santa Fe, I guess, brought them in. But they were all nice people. You couldn't, like I said, the with Skeet Winchester and Joe Molina and Jess. You couldn't find better people than them. And they all traded with us at the store. They didn't cause any trouble. They were great. And they all wanted to charge, but they paid every month. They were great.
Hmm. Now, how many, that's an interesting question. Did people normally charge and pay? I mean, was that a...
Oh, yeah, we had a big charge business there. Mm-hmm. And most of them, we didn't have any trouble with it.
They just paid when they got their paycheck, then they came in and paid their grocery bill.
That was a few, you know, you had trouble with, but it didn't take long to figure out who they were and stuff. And there was even shoplifters back then, mm-hmm. too. But it didn't take long till you knew which ones to keep an eyeball on. And some of them, it was usually the ones that surprised you. You wouldn't think to be a shoplifter that was the worst. But after a while, you learned who to keep track of.
Now, that's another area that I hadn't thought of before, because we talked with Boyd about he could remember getting his first charge card.
No.
But before that, the stores let you charge, you know, before you had the...
No, we didn't have charge cards.
No, it was just wrote on a ticket, yeah.
And put it in the file there. Uh-huh. And we thought standard operating procedure.
Yeah, well...
Well, it was back then.
It was then, yeah. So, did Wilda, when did she work, or...?
Yeah, she worked for KP&L till she got a little too pregnant with Kenyon at work, and she took a leave of absence and was gone several years, and then went back and worked several more years till she retired then later on.
So maybe did she go back to work when he went to school, or what, you know, maybe?
Yeah, the kids were pretty well out of school before she went back to work.
Okay.
Yeah, she took several years off.
Mm-hmm.
And she worked in the meantime for a little while for a Chevrolet garage till it burned down. And that's when she went back to work for KP&L.
We have a picture of her when she was at Chevrolet garage.
Oh, really?
A bunch of them standing there, you know.
No, she's in that.
Christmas picture when they remodeled or something. But she's in that. We have a picture.
Oh, yeah, I was going to show you. 50 caliber.
Yeah, we'll do that here in just a minute. Okay. What have we forgotten? Seems like we've forgotten something.
I know, but I can't see what it is.
See, you moved into town, so you had electricity and you had telephone. Do you remember getting your telephone? About when?
Not exactly. We didn't have a telephone until we moved to town in the 40s, so I know that.
And how about television? Do you remember when that came in and when it was?
That was in 53, I think. I was working in a Great Bend at the store then. And that was a funny thing. A little short on cash and wanted TV. And I got a surprise in the mail one day. I got what they call the foxhole pay, which I didn't even know was going to get. But I got a check for an extra, $35, $50 a month for every month it was in Korea. It came in the mail one day. And I didn't even know what it was for, but that was for the called foxhole pay or combat pay. Mm-hmm. There was a bonus to it, so that's where I got the first TV set.
And what year would that have been? About how long had you been out?
Oh, golly, I had been out for probably a year or 18 months or so, and it just one day there came in the mail.
That's unusual, the government, to do something like that.
Yeah, it was a shock, but I enjoyed every penny of it.
So you got your first TV was in Great Bend, and you had what, two or three stations?
One. And that was Hutchison, and then a little later on they got one in Great Bend, and now that was a change because it come in so much better. That person got it kind of like a washing a snowstorm, but it was TV though. Mm-hmm. And then when they got the station there in Great Bend, boy, that really perked me up. But today, though, the way it came in, you probably wouldn't even watch it.
I remembered one thing that we'd like to ask.
Yeah, this TV here is so much better than the first one. It's pitiful.
this goes back to your childhood, and you live, well, I mean, I kind of know where you lived, about by where Charlotte's school was. When you came into town, you would have been on the Highway 183, what we call now. What, that wasn't paved, or was
right.
it? Was your dad was in charge of maybe grading the road, or?
Well, he took care of it, filled up the holes and drug it and all that sort of stuff. And that's when it was dirt.
Yeah.
And I remember when they oiled it, that was a big improvement. But I don't remember what year it was. I'm sure it was in the late 30s, probably when they oiled it.
Okay.
Now, when did they pave it then?
Well, oiler paved it, doesn't
say
funny.
Because we have a picture of them working with horses during the Depression.
Oh.
On that road.
Well, Dad had a team of horses that he used to work on the road between here and the county line.
Yeah, we learned that the horses got a lot more for the horses than they did for themselves to work.
Could have been, I don't know.
They rented the horses out.
Well, if it hadn't been for the horses, they'd have been
right.
in trouble.
Yeah. What other tidbits does Miss Rosetta need?
Yeah. I think we know what the town kind of looked at like when he was here. We covered the church, we covered the hospital. Well, did your dad keep his team of horses at your house and then take him to wherever he was going?
Yeah.
Okay.
We lived out there, like say, 12 miles south, and that was about in the middle between Kinsley and county line.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a barn and kept horses out there in the barn. They kept them right there at the place.
Okay, is there anything left of your home that used to?
The only way you can tell where it was is going down the highway. You can see through the ditch where the driveway went to the house, but they've taken the old house and the barn and everything down. They even took the foundations out, so they farm right across it.
Okay.
And if you didn't know it was there, you'd never know it because it's all slicked off.
I guess we could have asked way back in the beginning, because do you remember anything about the Dirty 30s and the Depression? You're pretty young.
The main thing I remember was I was tall enough I could stand at the windowsill and play in the dust on the windowsill because the dirt was blowing around pretty good and dust would come in them old windows.
Sure.
And I played in the dust on the windowsill. And that's mainly what I remember about the Dirty 30s.
You're probably too young to know the effects of the Depression and...
Yeah, I don't remember
not,
a whole lot,
you know,
about that, yeah.
And you had food because you were raising it.
Well, yeah, we never went hungry by no means, but, you know, I didn't have any money to waste either, but I don't remember a whole lot about that. And I don't know, we always had something to eat, so.
You ready for the concluding ones? Okay. So is there anything you want to... You told us a little bit about your life, you know, since 1970. Anything else? You retired and
in 74, mm-hmm. I took my retirement from the Seal Mammals and put an investor saving loan and was getting 15% interest for a while, and things were great. And went to work for the hospital and worked there for 20 years.
What did you do at the hospital?
Well, I was in charge of maintenance, and I worked on the ambulance service too. I was ambulance driver for a little longer than that, because I did part of that while I was still working on that. So that's what got me out of the store to the hospital, was the fact that I'd taken a job helping on the ambulance service. So they already knew me, and when they needed somebody to be maintenance, they thought that'd be a pretty good deal. I could be maintenance, be right there to drive the ambulance. So they came and talked to me about switching jobs. And I'm glad they did, because it cut my hours down from 65 hours a week to 40, and I was making more money than I was at the store, so it all worked out great.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody ought to work on an ambulance service for a while. You never know what she was getting into.
Yeah. And that would have been at the new hospital.
Well, I started over here.
You started here.
on okay. Fifth Street.
And then
moved out there.
Moved out there. Was it 69?
Short time. We moved out there in the tail end of 74. So I was only over here just a few months. What a switch.
Why? Why went to the switch?
New hospital, everything in it was upside down, backward, or wrong side out. You could not believe the boo-boos that was in a new building. One that was so humorous, two of them, I think, was the mangle where the ladies in the laundry was trying to get the mangle to suck those. It was running backwards. They had hell of a time. And then the next one, that north hall that went clear up to the north end, it had one light switch. Well, guess where that was at? Clear up to the north end. And the women work at there at night. They didn't like that. They walked clear up to the north end and shut up. Then walk down in the dark. So I had to rewire that and put a switch on each end. I got that taken care of. After a while, they said, how do we get the lights off here in the lobby at night? Well, it's go to switch. It wasn't a switch. It was turned on and that was it. So I got the blueprint out and looked, and what they had done, originally it was planned for a dimmer switch. And they decided that thing cost $3 something to put a flip switch in there for 39 cents. So they said delete instead of change. Well, they deleted. They didn't put anything in. They just let the switch out. They deleted it. So I had to get into the wire again and rewire so we'd have a switch to shut the lights up. And it was just, oh, just one thing after another like that. You couldn't believe all the boo-boos that was in the new building. And that one reason for that, though, the county was saving money. They didn't hire an inspector to keep an eyeball on them while they were building them. So then after it was over, then we had to change all that stuff. Yeah, they were going to have to rechange plumbing, electrical, everything. You couldn't believe it. I remember one, there was one pot that was hooked up to hot water. Yeah. when you flush the pot, you could feel the heat and steam coming up.
Nice in the wintertime.
Yeah. And, it was crazy.
Now, somebody was yesterday in the library or something was talking about there may have been some controversy, and did we figure out which hospital? There might have been some controversy about keeping the hospital or having the hospital in Kinsley rather than Lewis, or do you remember anything like that?
Yeah, there was some controversy over that, but nobody around here was too enthused about putting one in Lewis. So, but the controversy came to close up the one on Fifth Street and build a new one out west. Now, that was the real controversy, and it was funny. They said this was too small, which at the time, I had people sitting in the hall and stuff, but at the same time we moved out to the new one, that's when business slowed down, and so
the population decreased, and you really didn't need the bigger facility.
Didn't need the bigger hospital. And another thing, state regulations changed it. This hall over here was a foot narrower than the state recommended later, so hospital out there had a foot wider hall, and all just scads of little dumb things like that, which really made no difference. And the truth was, this whole hospital was fine over here. Shouldn't ever move.
Because it wasn't that old.
No, it still opened up in 49. So it wasn't that old. But anyway, there was a few that wanted a new hospital, and they got it. Which was a mistake, to my way of thinking.
Mm-hmm. Well.
And this old building over here will be standing when not the newest part out there, the middle part, falls in before this one. Over here on Fifth Street, because this is a good building over here. That other one out there is tin, and the roof leaked and rotted tin on it already. So, much better building over here on Fifth Street.
Maybe they had inspectors over here, too.
May have. I don't know. I wasn't involved with that. But it was just a better building to start with.
They still had pride in their work when they built that.
Yes.
And then they didn't care.
I guess not. And the original plan over here on Fifth Street was, if we ever needed more room, it was built sturdy enough, we could have had a two-story built on top. But they didn't want that. And the few that was against this hospital and wanted a new one, and kept going until they got the new one, which, to my way of thinking, was a mistake. Which doesn't mean it was a mistake, but I think it was.
Well, looking back overall, how do you think living in Edwards County affected your life?
Didn't really affect it. I just grew up. Always managed to have a good job and no problems there. And, you know, if you have never had something, you don't miss it. Now, looking back, there was a few things that might have been shorter, but at the time, if you've never had it, you can't miss it. Or at least I don't think you do.
And the population has continued to decrease since 1970. What other changes have you seen? Because it's gotten lower and lower. Like, it's stabilized right now, we learned the other night at the city commission's meeting. But
well, there won't be changes. We've got more illegals that living here than we used to. That's kept the population up. But I guess that's what happened. I don't know. Is it staying about the same now?
For the last few years, it's sort of leveled out. Of course, the downtown and everything, there's...
Yeah, downtown, there's too many...
We have no car dealers now, right?
Yeah, there's no car dealers, and there's a lot of vacant buildings. And one thing we do have more of than we used to have, and that's little dinky parks up there on the street where it used to be a building. Mm-hmm. And that's not a... That change is not necessarily good.
What do you see for the future of Edwards County?
I won't be here.
Do you think it'll stay a viable... We talked about this last night at the library program. Do you think it's going to stay a viable community, or...
Oh, it'll be around for a long time, yes, yeah. I don't know how long, but... Yeah, as long as the county seats here, it'll be a town. Now, when they are talking about consolidating with, what, four or five others, now that might be the downfall. Well, you know it will be. So, I don't know where the county seat would be. Probably Dodge City then. Isn't that what the talk is now?
I know there's talk, but I don't... I'm not...
Well, it takes in Kiowa and Edwards, Pawnee, Rush, and this around, and Dodge City would probably be the most central place if they ever go to consolidating four or five counties together. And I know that's the talk. Matter of fact, there's a piece in paper just in the last week or so about it. It had a map of showing the counties that would be consolidated. I don't know if you've seen that or not in the Hudson paper.
We were talking last night at the program. There's 105 counties in Kansas. Mm-hmm. And Arizona has 15 counties.
Oh, really?
And a lot of states don't have as many counties as we have.
Arizona has one thing we don't have, and that's the sheriff that rules the roost out there. quite a guy there.
A lot of empty space out there, too.
Oh, yeah. A lot of heat, too.